You know, modern life, this is at 22 past seven, by the way. I hope you're enjoying your Saturday morning before we get a bit too heavy. But modern life, it just seems to be this constant tension between our right to privacy and the desire for some benefit or convenience. If we're not trading off, you know, money for benefit or convenience, it seems to be our right to privacy that we're trading away here. You know, would you like a free map program so you don't get lost? Fine. Just give away your personal information about where you've been to a private company. They can use it however they like. But, you know, that's the trade-off. Would you like a free internet search system? No worries. Just give away all your personal information about what you're searching about to a private company. They can use it however they like. And this week the question was raised about a different kind of, I guess, privacy trade-off. Would you trade your privacy, your private information, for your right essentially to access the outside world? And when we look at exactly how we're going to move away from the restrictions that have been placed to reduce the spread of coronavirus, one of the scenarios that the government's investigating is perhaps an app that could quickly identify people who'd been in close contact with each other, a trace tracker app. I mean, think about how much quicker that could make contact tracing, how it might reduce the chance for disease to spread before symptoms occur. But then where does your right to privacy fit in this? Especially yesterday when the Prime Minister and also the Deputy Chief Medical Officer left the option to make the app compulsory on the table. I mean, they said voluntary was the first preference and the very strong preference, but they didn't rule out the idea of making it slightly less voluntary. Stilgarian is a technology journalist who's written about this for ZDNet. G'day, Stil.
Good morning, Kate.
So tell us a little bit about the notion of the Trace Tracker app. How does it work?
It's actually really quite clever. So we know about Bluetooth, which we use to connect keyboards to our computer and earbuds to our phones and things like that. There's a version of that called Bluetooth Low Energy, Bluetooth LE, which can just act as a little beacon, a little kind of thing that goes ping every now and then to see what other Bluetooth LE devices are in the area. Now, it's used for a variety of commercial things, like, you know, you come into a shop and the shop says, aha, here's your phone, we'll pop you up a quick, hey, you know, if you buy something today, we'll give you 10% off and that sort of thing. And it's only got a range of a few meters. The idea is that an app on your phone will use Bluetooth LE just to note an ID number of any phones that you are in proximity to for, let's say, more than 15 minutes. Remember, at the beginning of the epidemic, we were told, don't spend more than 15 minutes in the same room with someone. So let's say 15 minutes. And then if at a later date, you know, in the next few days, any of those ID numbers, and I must say they're not phone numbers, they're not people's, you know, Medicare number or anything like that. They're a random little ID number that changes every day, and they're kept in the central server. In this case, it would be the health department or someone. And then if it's found that some of those people you talk to, that you have been in proximity with,
that you waited in a line with at Centrelink or whatever, you know?
Yeah, that, exactly, or on a bus.
Yeah.
Then it would just ping you to say, hey, we think one of the people you've been in touch with has tested positive, so perhaps you should get tested. And also, would you give us permission to upload your list of contacts so that we can just let, you know, so that if you'd end up testing positive, we can tell them as well. And that's the deal. And I will say it doesn't include your location.
It doesn't hold the information in advance and know all of your contacts. You have to say, yes, I'll give you the information that's stored on my device about who I've been close to. Ah, okay.
That's right. So it'll contact. And also that information does not include your location, your GPS location. It's purely that somewhere, we don't know where, but you were near this other person's phone.
Gil from Toowong has been listening and pondering this. How do you feel about it, Gil?
Yeah, actually, the update of the Bluetooth technology is interesting. I think it alleviates a lot of the kind of government knowing all your data issue of, and such. But the main issue I think I take problem with is the compulsory nature of it. And I think, I don't think it was picked up a couple of days ago, but one of Scott Morrison's updates, he alluded to the fact that if you had it, it may be if you had COVID, it may be compulsory to have it. And then he was saying if you don't have it, then it wouldn't be compulsory. But I just, I think a lot of people have 1984 echoing in the back of their heads when they think about mandated actions by the government.
Well, I mean, Stilgarian, is there a good reason for people to feel a bit dodgy about the government holding a bunch of data about them?
Sure. I mean, hasn't the Australian government been like a paragon of excellence in IT over the last few years? When you look at its use of robo-debt in Centrelink, its failures around the census, there's been all manner of failures to keep... Oh, and My Health Record, we've seen some problems there. It's really hard. It's really hard, and in this case, we're dealing with something which has been rushed. And Scott Morrison himself has been inconsistent, as Gill has just pointed out. We had the minister, Stuart Robert, on Thursday, I think it was, saying that they would exchange phone numbers with each other, your devices, which is simply not true, and it's a very alarming thing to hear. And now ruling out compulsion isn't being done. And I think people need to be cautious and make their own decisions on that. In the same way, I think people need to make their own decisions about My Health Record. And I know the fabulous Norman Swan and I would disagree on that. We've never spoken about it, but we do have very... not diametrically opposed, but he's a bit more Pollyanna about it, and I'm a bit more, can we trust the government?
Well, as a tech journo, that's bound to be your position almost. I'm just wondering, though, looking at particularly at this trace tracker idea, one of the concerns that people have around government and data harvesting and personal information harvesting is function creep, where you start with one set of reasons why some information would be kept and you move to something else. Is it possible with this Trace Tracker app that, they could pull up some data that says, oh, actually, we want witnesses to this car accident that happened yesterday and this person's phone was in this, you know what I mean?
Exactly that. And that's a fabulous use case, because it's another one that on the surface sounds like, I might be okay with that, but you and I can't think through all of the possible uses that might eventually be put to. Now, if Australia goes with this essentially an update of an app that's already in use in Singapore, the data is on the phone, you upload it voluntarily, it's deleted from your phone every 21 days, because, I mean, after that, if you're still healthy, who needs it? You're still relying on the central server, run by the government, to behave itself and do the right thing. And that could be changed with the stroke of a pen, very easily. Oh, let's not make it 21 days. Let's say, oh, this is more communication data, so under the metadata laws, it has to be 2 years, right? I mean, we're investigating crimes or car crashes. So, there is always this tension between what law enforcement and so on want to do and the confidentiality of health information.
Phil from Mount Cuthah says, I'm definitely going to use the COVID app if it's available. However, how do I know if an infected person in a shopping centre left their smartphone in the car? So
exactly that. How do you know that they didn't cough on and then wipe their hand on a handrail in the car park and you were only there an hour and a half later, but you're still getting infected? And that's actually one of the problems. The use of an app like this could give people a false sense of security so that they then are not being as careful about their hygiene, they're not being as careful about their distancing from other people. And we simply don't know how much this sort of thing will change behaviour, because in this pandemic, this is the first time we've ever tried using this technology. We're only a couple of weeks in of it being used at all in places like Singapore. And... and will that be useful? Will it turn out that telling people, hey, you might have been in, as you say, the queue at Centrelink, and there were quite a few people around, you might get a ping every couple of days saying, can we have your data? You're still feeling healthy. you think, no, I'm going to ignore these. The last three have been false alarms. Or the opposite could happen, that you get a sudden wave of people who've really just got a cold or a bit of hay fever, suddenly worrying, going in for testing, overloading the testing regime, and people who are perhaps symptomless aren't going in for testing. You know, we don't know how the numbers will turn out.
Just another working question. How does one person asking, does it rely on Bluetooth on the phone being turned on?
Yes. Bluetooth has to be turned on, obviously. It also has to be running constantly. And the app at the moment on an iPhone, it has to not only be running constantly, the app has to be in the foreground and your phone has to be unlocked. So
But mine locks after just a couple of minutes.
No. Well, obviously, you don't need to have all this turned on when you're home because, as someone pointed out to me yesterday, look, if I had a contact tracing app now, I'll tell you who I'm within, you know, 5 metres of. It's my wife and two kids and no one else for the 5 days. So, yeah, this is the thing. It you know, I'm not going to walk around with my phone unlocked, thank you very much. You know, that's a mugging waiting to happen. And, again, there are all of these bits that say, is it going to give you a false sense of security? Will people use that? Even in Singapore at the moment, we believe, at least this is the figure being reported, that 20% of the population have started using the app. Now, Singapore has a reputation for people following the rules, and if they're asked to do something, you know, to help health and government, they'll usually be on board. Only 20% in Singapore are using it. We've already heard figures in Australia in the press briefings that we'd have to get 40% take up for it to be a useful thing. Now, I don't see Australians as being more compliant than Singaporeans, really.
And, yeah, so it'd be interesting to see if more would volunteer. I guess that's why they've opened the door for it not to be voluntary. Ron from Yatala, what was your question?
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
I see this thing as completely back to front.
Yeah.
Because if I need to register to be informed that while I'm at the shopping centre, I'm in close proximity to someone who has COVID-19.
Mm.
I want to know why that person is at the shopping centre.
Well, because it could be in the 24 hours before they had symptoms, Ron, and they only find out 24 hours later, or they only decide to go in for testing 24 hours later, and they get the data from your phone, the data that relates to something that happened 3 days ago, in order to be able to get to you and inform you that you need to get tested now instead of waiting for your symptoms to appear and then having an extra lag. Do you understand what I mean about speeding up that process?
Yeah, but that's on the condition that A, I'm registered, and B, that person is registered to say where we've both been 3 days ago or 7 days ago.
Mm.
Well, how long is this information being held?
Yeah, still we're saying, was it 20 days or something still?
21 days is what Singapore is doing. So generally it's 14-day period during which you're infectious, but it could be longer, so that's why 21 days. It's also worth noting that a significant proportion of people will not show symptoms and will not know that they're COVID-19 positive ever unless they are found to have infected someone. You remember the American aircraft carrier, USS Theodore Roosevelt, which had an outbreak on board recently? The captain was sacked for looking for help. They've now tested the crew of that ship. Of all of the sailors that tested positive, 60% of them were not showing any symptoms, which means they could just be going about their everyday activity and not realising they're infecting people. And that's a significant part of an app like this giving you a false sense of security.
But on the other hand, it could close that loophole. You know, if you were next to somebody in a line at Centrelink, that would be quite hard to track down with a contact tracing. But if you have an immediate kind of ping to tell you to go in and get tested, even if you don't have symptoms, it could mean that, you know, people who are asymptomatic might be more likely to be identified.
Exactly. And that's the great unknown in all this. We simply don't know how the numbers play out for these various options. And I must stress again, you're not told it was a person at the supermarket. You don't know where, and, you know, you're not going to be told where this contact was. You've got to protect the medical privacy of other people. And the last thing you want is someone saying, oh, I reckon it was at that Asian supermarket down the road when I was buying rice. And you can trigger more racially motivated violence, which we've already seen that sort of thing happen in the US, where African Americans are obviously affected more than white Americans in this case. And so various areas where there is more of a black population, people are saying, oh, no, no, don't go there. And we're seeing, more violence than normal in America.
Okay. Still, you look at the detail of this stuff more than others on the basis of what we know so far. And as you say, the app could be tweaked or whatever. But on the basis of what we know so far, would you put the app on your phone?
I'm still undecided. But my personal choice is I probably wouldn't, because I live up in the Blue Mountains and I don't see anyone anyway. So it's not, for me, going to provide all that much.
But if it relied on 40% of the population agreeing to it in order for everybody to be able to leave their houses and kind of have some of these restrictions lifted, as we see these things, there's a trade-off between, you know, privacy versus, you know, benefit. If the benefit is being able to leave your house and do more, eat in restaurants, would you do it?
I'm still undecided. And the reason I say that is this idea that if we get the app, then we can let you out is the wrong way around. It is if we determine that it is now safe to have people out in the community because there are not enough people in the community for us to worry too much and it won't overload the medical facilities. This is the flatten the curve thing. Maybe it'll be okay. And as you said in the introduction, it's not going to happen for at least 4 weeks. The app isn't going to happen for weeks anyway. I'm actually kind of a bit mystified as to why Prime Minister Scott Morrison is muddying the waters with an inconsistent message about an app that doesn't exist. And we're just going to have more conversations like this, which probably confuse things more than clarify.
But why do you say it doesn't exist? It does exist in Singapore, doesn't it?
Yeah, but they're still reviewing it for Australia and making modifications. And just because there's an app you can download in Singapore doesn't mean that there's a server here in Australia that's matching phone numbers, that's matching, you know, the back end, if you like, doesn't exist in Australia.
Right.
You know, and that's something. And if you don't want,
I can just imagine though, people with kids, you know, that are climbing the walls, desperate to get out, are like, "Give me the app, give me five apps. I don't care. Let me out of here."
I think parents of young kids have probably got the toughest gig here at the moment, haven't they? Look, here's the thing though. It can't happen instantly because if you have 40% of 26 million Australians, or 22 million adults, I can't do the sums in my head, but you've basically got, what's that,
eight million
telephones all trying to ping this thing. That's a heck of a big bit of back-end infrastructure, and that's hard to get right.
Still, there are some questions, and, you know, in particular about how it works and the Bluetooth having to be constantly on and, you know, and on and... Thank you so much for illuminating all of that for us. It's very interesting. I really appreciate that.
Look, pleasure. And look, we'll find out more in a few weeks, won't we?
We will. Thanks so much, Stilgherrian.
No worries, Kate. Good talk.
Stilgherrian, a technology journal. He wrote about this for ZDNet, and interesting to hear his take on it as we discuss the issues that have been sort of in the foreground this week.